Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
So, have you felt like, and I've kind of felt like this, that people are, I don't want to say anti-LeBron, but because Jordan was portrayed as such a larger-than-life figure, that LeBron has been getting some, I don't know if negative press is the right thing to say, but just like it's all Jordan, and then LeBron is secondary at this point.
But why would LeBron be secondary at this point? I mean, he's not playing games, and you're watching.
I understand
the last
that, but it's like everyone is because a few months ago, you're much closer for LeBron to be the guy that people thought was the greatest of all time, and now you watch this documentary, and it's all Michael Jordan.
Which was exactly why it was released.
Of course. This is exactly what Michael Jordan
wanted.
And
by the way, that whole poll that they did, the 600 people that they polled, I mean, the most fugazi poll of all time. Okay? Embarrassment.
Well, why were you so bothered by it?
I mean, Jordan won everything. Better passer.
17, right?
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just, you can't even take it serious.
Yeah, I can't take that serious. Michael Jordan is a better passer than LeBron James. I don't see it that way. But maybe that's just me.
Yeah, no, that's not just
but
you.
Think of your prisoner of the moment. You just watched a documentary on how great Michael is. You saw him win. You saw everyone, you know, bow at his feet. He wins championship after championship. Everyone says it's the greatest thing they've ever seen. And then you put a poll out about who's better, him or LeBron, with these things. Of course it's going to be Michael.
Well, yeah, you're going to have a recency bias. But I guess I look at it from the standpoint that I don't know that LeBron James could ever be in position to eclipse Michael Jordan. Without Michael Jordan, LeBron James wouldn't be possible. I mean, Kobe Bryant talked about it in the docuseries in one of the earlier episodes. He says, I mean, people compare me to Jordan, and they try to say that, okay, this part of my game or that part of my game is better than Jordan. And he said, all of the things that they're talking about, I got from Jordan. Like, Jordan made it possible for Kobe Bryant. Jordan made it possible for LeBron James. Jordan globalized the game of basketball, but he also established the blueprint on how an individual player can brand himself and monetize that brand in a team sport. We hadn't seen that before in the NBA before Michael Jordan. We really hadn't seen that in professional sports before Michael Jordan, not at that level. So, I mean, when you start talking about the success that LeBron James has had on and off the court and other athletes in today's NBA, like, a lot of that has to be attributed to Michael Jordan. So, again, I come back to the greatness of Michael Jordan, to me, can't be eclipsed by LeBron James. The best that LeBron James can hope for is trying to tie this situation. I don't think that LeBron James can ever be bigger or considered a greater basketball player than Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think he'd be hard-pressed. At this point, I think he'd be hard-pressed, especially now that this younger generation has had a chance to watch The Last Dance,
right,
and actually see it for themselves. Because everything gets sensationalized, right? You know, I mean, when you start hearing the stories, and then all of a sudden, I mean, all the stories your dad told you about Michael Jordan, how great he was, you get a chance to watch with your own eyes. And then to see the teams he beat, I mean, the likes of Bird and Magic and the Detroit Pistons team, and then, you know, the Utah Jazz with Malone and Stockton, and you get a chance to see it and the kind of competitor that Jordan was, and, you know, some of the nuggets about, you know, Jordan sneakers and him being one of the first, you know, him being the first basketball player to, you know, to have his own signature sneaker, and how many, you know, they were expecting to sell, you know, 3 million in the first, you know, hopefully, what'd they say, 3 million?
I think it was
three years.
Yeah.
What'd they do, like 100 and something million?
Yeah, in the first year. In his rookie year. Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, he's become in the NBA, maybe in sports in general. Like, he's the gold standard, man. I mean, he's what you're striving to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no one. I mean, who's even next up when it comes to that? Tiger was up there for a while.
Yep.
Yeah, but Tiger's not the unquestioned best in his sport of all time.
No.
I would agree with that.
I mean, Jordan is the unquestioned. Like, the best of the best.
They say he's the best. Like, other players that are in the top five conversation, best basketball players of all time, they say that Michael Jordan was the best and is the best. Even with LeBron James now being on the scene for the last decade and a half. Now, that's not to take away from LeBron James. I mean, he came into the NBA with the pressure of trying to live up to the standard that Michael Jordan set.
And he has.
I mean, LeBron James on most people's list is number two. And that's not all bad. I just, when you start having a conversation about who was the better player. To me, competitive greatness has to come up. And Michael Jordan, who never let an NBA Finals series get to a game seven, that to me means something. Being at your best when your best is required. We have not seen LeBron James dominate at the NBA Finals level like Michael Jordan did. Now, that's not to say that LeBron isn't amazing. He went to eight straight NBA Finals. I mean, Rick jokes around and talks about LeBron being the 31st franchise in the NBA. So, I mean, LeBron James is a special, special player. And there are some things that I think he does at a higher level than Michael Jordan ever did. But I just think when it comes down to it, when it comes to, you know, being your best, when your best is needed, Michael Jordan always answered that call. I mean, the flu game is case in point. I mean, seeing what happened to him, the food poisoning, doesn't make excuses, on the fence as to whether or not he'd play. Phil Jackson didn't know. His mom didn't know. He still goes out there and drops 40-something points.
He always did. That's the thing. It's like a larger-than-life figure. He always, always did. Whatever the biggest moment was the best version you got of Michael Jordan.
Oh, he didn't always.
Almost always.
No, exactly right, though. I mean, the good far outweighs the bad. Like, he gave you so much of the good that you're willing to overlook the bad.
I mean, can you think of bad?
No, not bad, but I mean, there was failure. I mean, he didn't hit every last second shot. Like, every big shot he didn't make, every free throw he didn't make.
Every one, but I mean, over the course of a series, he wound up hitting enough for the most part that they're going to win that series.
Exactly. There's been so much great that you don't have to, I mean, there's no time to sit and focus on the bad, because the good far outweighs the bad.
I mean, he did it in 82. He did it in 84. He did it in the NBA. He did it in the NBA Finals. He did it in 92 for the Dream Team. I mean, he always did it.
And that's why he's the best.
Exactly. Exactly.
And when you state your intentions, too, I think that's part of LeBron's problem, too, is that he stated his intentions. I mean, you know, chosen one on his back and everything else, that he was trying to catch the ghost. He was trying to catch Michael Jordan. It's like the old adage, right? To, you know, when you're trying to, you know, beat the champ. If it comes down to, you know, if it's close, the champ will get the benefit of the doubt. Like, it's got to be, like, if it's going to go to a decision, usually the champ ends up winning. Like, you got to knock the champ out.
Right.
LeBron hasn't knocked the champ out.
I don't know how you could. How could you be better than what Michael gave you?
Well, he's already missed his opportunity, because, I mean, everyone that loves Jordan will always go back to the fact that Jordan never lost the finals. He's 6-for-6. So the second you lose, unless he wins, unless LeBron, you know, gets the 7 championships, even if he wins 6, he'll have lost. He's already lost champion. He's already lost in the finals. So even if you get to six,
did he lose in the finals, but he had a finals where he was not good.
No, he wasn't good at all. But again, I mean, in order to be considered the greatest of all time, when you start matching up accomplishments, the one thing that Jordan has that LeBron will never have is 6-for-6 in the finals. So unless you get to 7, unless you win 7 championships, even
which
if you get to 6.
Four more now.
Yeah, which is, even if you have 6, the people that love Jordan will say, well, Jordan was 6-for-6, you lost in the finals.
He can get
that. Wasn't that always the conversation between Brady and Montana?
Oh, yeah.
Like, even when Brady got to 4 championships, they're like, well, Montana never lost. He was 4-for-4.
Yeah, and the point that we all made was like, well, if Tom Brady got to 9 Super Bowls and won 6 of them, why would you hold it against him the fact that he was able to take his team 3 other times where they didn't win it to the biggest game the sport has to offer? Like, that just didn't make any sense.
So if that's the case, then why don't we give more credit to LeBron for going to 8 straight finals?
Well, I think we should. But
I think we do.
But you think we do?
I think we do. I think that's why. I mean, I think that's why Jordan felt pressure, that all of a sudden LeBron James was knocking on the door. A lot of people now, when you start talking about Mount Rushmores, have LeBron James as the second guy on that list.
Yeah, they have him as the second guy, but I think the reason why they won't put him as the top guy is just because of how LeBron James' career unfolded. Like, LeBron James started in Cleveland, and then he had to go to basketball school down in Miami, joined 2 other All-NBA players in order to win his first championship. Had an opportunity to then go back to Cleveland, join another All-NBA player in Kyrie Irving, trade for Kevin Love, and then win another championship. And now he's on the doorstep of winning a championship with his 3rd franchise. And I think that's why Jordan felt the pressure, because when you start talking about a guy winning 3 NBA titles with 3 different franchises, I think it puts him a little bit closer to Michael Jordan. It does.
Yeah, that's why he put this thing out.
Yes.
Because LeBron had that unbelievable comeback, down 3-1. They went won three in a row. They won the championship. And Jordan said, all right, you know what? He's closing in. Let's get this thing out.
Don't forget, LeBron.
People
LeBron
see what
James,
I was.
LeBron James actually verbalized it after that championship. I consider myself the greatest of all time now.
After the one in Cleveland, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he said it.
When they came back from 3-1.
See, I'm not one. I do not at any point criticize LeBron James for making the decision to leave Cleveland. Because this is not, I mean, this is not tennis or golf. This is a team sport. And sometimes, all the time, you're at the mercy of people making decisions. Now, as bad of a guy as people want to think Jerry Krause was, he was damn good at his job. So he put great talent around Mike, like talent that fit perfectly for Michael Jordan. And then you get Phil Jackson and you have this dynasty. Cleveland was not doing LeBron James any favors.
No.
During his first stint. You want to talk about carrying bad teams? LeBron James was carrying very average teams.
I didn't even know that they were average teams.
No, they were bad teams.
Were bad teams. So at a certain point, for LeBron James, you're going to be like, okay, now I'm not the one making these decisions. I'm going to sit here and waste my prime years with these dummies as opposed to now having the opportunity to go, you know, join a team with Dwayne Wade and Pat Riley making decisions. Yeah, I'm going to go be a part of that.
And we can add Chris Bosh to the mix as well. That sounds like the place for me. And it's South Beach.
It's a no-brainer, man.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. Anyone would make that decision. I'm just going to sit this one. I'm going to stick it out here in Cleveland. Come on, man.
Cleveland. Stop. All right, Lou in the truck. Lou, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Enjoy the show. Love listening to you. My whole thing with this LeBron James, Michael Jordan thing is the fact that LeBron came into the league at 18. His next best player on his team was who? Mo Williams? Who did this guy play with? And, yeah, he went to Miami. He did all that. I hated him during that as a Knicks fan. But I give LeBron a lot more credit, and I think he has more of a chance of becoming the GOAT if he goes and plays five, six more years. How isn't he the GOAT if he plays into his, you know, later 30s and early 40s?
I think that we define the GOAT now with how many championships you win and how many appearances you make to win a title. And if he doesn't get to that number that Michael has, and Michael does it in, I don't know, eight less years or whatever, I think that people will still consider Michael to be the greatest of all time.
Different errors, too.
It's about championships, though.
Well, it's about championships, which maybe it shouldn't be because it is a team sport. But, I mean, for Michael Jordan, I mean, he was never not the best player on the six championship teams. I mean, he carried six teams to championship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think if you really wanted to make a case for LeBron James, you would start really focusing more on, you know, skill set. Who's the better all-around player?
Mm-hmm.
And when it's all said and done and you end up looking up and seeing all-time leaders, I mean, LeBron James, if he sticks around long enough, he could, you know, be the NBA all-time points leader. And you start looking at how many assists he had and how many rebounds he had. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, maybe he'll never be the GOAT, but you may be hard-pressed to ever see anybody for a long time that's as well-rounded as a basketball player. All in. Everything included.
Have we ever seen it? I don't know that we've ever seen something that can do everything the way he can.
I'm with you on that one, Dave. I don't think we've ever seen it.
Now, Michael could, but Michael wasn't a great rebounder and wasn't a great passer. He could do it.
And I don't think Michael had the defensive versatility that LeBron James has. I don't think you could put LeBron James on really any player in the NBA and you call it a huge, huge defensive liability. I don't see that.
Well, especially now. I mean, with these lineups going small. I mean, he's 6'9", 265, 270.
He's bigger than Draymond Green
who plays the five.
Who can't he defend if he needs to defend somebody?
Anybody.
That's why, Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time. And I don't think LeBron ever gets to that point where he takes that step just because of the championships and everything else. But till the day I'll die, the better comparison, if you want to make comparisons, is LeBron James and Magic Johnson.
Yeah, because his mentality, especially on the offensive side of the court, is more like Magic.
Yeah, mentality, size. Yeah. I mean, you remember the playoff game where Kareem was out and Magic played all five?
Yeah,
he took the tip.
Year.
He took
game
the opening
six
tip.
Of 1980, yep.
I mean, he defended all five positions. And then LeBron James' ability to stay healthy. I mean, the dude is, with how physical he plays, The dude is a specimen, man.
So yeah, but Michael Jordan played like all 82 games when he was with the Wizards and he was 40 years old. That's insane.
That's insane, but I think, if, yeah. I mean, again, that's one of those arguments that it's kind of, you adapt to the times, and because now this is load management and everything else, and you have all this advanced, you know, look at baseball. I mean, look at Cal Ripken playing all those consecutive games. There's no chance ever, ever.
Nobody's going to pitch ever.
You could beg your manager to play. I'm healthy. Skip, I'm healthy. No, no. Well, if you break down the numbers here, it shows you that if you have this one day off that, you know, you'll be this much better the following day. Come on.
He plays 2,600 consecutive games.
Ridiculous, dude. That is one of the craziest records of all time.
It's crazy. Insane. You'll never get. I mean, you guys play, if you have a big time season, you play what, 155 now?
We have 4 stays off. You just wouldn't be allowed.
Right. I wonder what the longest. I wonder what the record right now is for the most consecutive games played. It's probably not 300. Right?
Whew. No, I mean, how many guys are playing all 162?
No, yeah, not a whole lot. Yeah.
2,600. Bring him in, our favorite resident general manager, and that is Mike Tenenbaum. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're hanging in there as best we can. Lot of stories around the NFL. Not a lot of them are great stories right now. Let's start with the one that clearly affects the Giants in a big way with DeAndre Baker. I guess you were GM, front office guy. Walk us through how you handle something like this if you are in the front office, if you are the Gettlemans of the world, if you are the Giants front office, how you handle what's going on right now with DeAndre Baker.
Well, you really need to be thorough and make sure you find out exactly what happened. And what's always interesting is, guys, whether this is player-driven or attorney-driven, the more the attorney is layered in early in the process, the more your radar goes up that he has something to hide, the more candid, transparent, and honest he is, the more he's probably innocent. So one of the things that I think we've all learned over the years is there's two sides to every story, and oftentimes the truth is in the middle. Candidly, this one's kind of interesting to me because if I'm Joe Judge, in the back of my mind, this is an opportunity to lay the grounds for law and order, and I'm not saying that he's not going to be fair, but I think the benefit of the doubt, that the lens of Joe Judge's benefit of the doubt, is going to be discernibly different than maybe Dave Gettleman's would be.
Mike T, and just to continue with the whole DeAndre Baker thing, before the draft, leading into the Giants, you know, trading away the three picks to get up in the first round, and select him, there were some red flags. As a GM, I know you guys picked Laremy Tunsil and you did your due diligence, but are there any certain, you know, red flags that would completely take a player off of your board?
Absolutely. And I think really what comes down to, Rick, is, you know, is it a pattern of behavior or is it a good person that made a mistake? And that's always the lens that you try to make these decisions. In Tunsil's case, you know, his was pronounced and it was national, you know, the mistake he made. But we had a lot of good information and we were proven right on that decision that he was a good person that made a mistake. So I think, and we've talked about this before, but I'm steadfast in my belief that who you are in life is how you treat people that can help you. The waiter, the waitress, the equipment manager, the trainer. So I think for something like this, I want to talk to DeAndre Baker's trainer, and I want to talk to the equipment guy. I want to talk to the academic advisor. I want to see his level of commitment, maturity, judgment. And those are the decisions. When no one's looking in Athens, Georgia, that's really who he is. So the context of making those decisions has to include a lot of those sources.
Mike T, the NFL owners are supposed to meet today and implement new changes to the Rooney Rule. I want to get your thoughts on the initial proposal and then what you think is at the heart of the matter when it comes to hiring, you know, minority candidates at the highest levels of these organizations.
Yeah, Chris, obviously this is a critically important topic, and I'm very proud of being part of the group that hired Herm Edwards at the Jets. We had a successful run with Herm. Chris Greer, the general manager in Miami, and they were clearly the best people for those jobs when we hired them. And I would say more fundamentally when I look at this, I understand that there's reasons to try to adjust the rules, and I understand the adjustments, but more fundamentally to me is going back to the very beginnings of getting more qualified candidates, minority, women, in the pipeline earlier. So, because I think right now what the league is trying to do, understandably, is try to put a Band-Aid on it. But how do we solve the wound? And I think the best way to do that is to start at the lowest levels, increase minority internships, entry-level jobs, give gender-diverse opportunities. And I think there's been some progress, but, you know, we need to see a lot more of it and quicker. And I think once you see that, Chris, if we're having this discussion in 2 to 3 years, hopefully we're going to see discernibly improved results.
Mike T., just as a follow-up to that, Anthony Lynn had some strong comments around this issue over the weekend. And one of the things that he said is that he believes that there are plenty of qualified assistant coaches of color in the National Football League that could be head coaches today. Last year, the NFL had 180 coaches participate in the Bill Walsh Coaches Fellowship Program. So I guess my point in saying all of those things is that it feels like we do have competent, qualified coaches in and around the National Football League that are capable of developing into successful head coaches. Why do you think they're not getting those opportunities?
Yeah, it's a really fair point. And Aylin is someone that I'm proud to say that I work with. When I was a coaching agent, I represented him. And he's earned the right. He's a great example of, Chris, a former player, worked his way up. Rex gave him an opportunity to be the offensive coordinator in Buffalo, and obviously the rest is history. There should be more people that have real – I agree. There should be more minority candidates who are currently head coaches and GMs. And hopefully what we're going to see in the not-too-distant future, let's just take one team, for example, Tampa Bay. If they have any success this year, which by all accounts they will, given the quarterback they now have, both Todd Bowles and, in my opinion, Byron Leftwich will be very intriguing candidates to be head coaching candidates next year. So I think what happens is these candidates, and I was part of it, where guys get momentum. When we hired Adam Gase in 2016, he had a ton of momentum. And let's all hope we're talking about when we get to January is, you know, Tampa Bay's on a roll, and now both of their coordinators on both sides of the ball, both minorities, both deservedly would have the opportunity to have very good, realistic chances to be head coaches in the next cycle.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I want to go back to this DeAndre Baker story with you quickly. What frustrates me the most about it is that there were red flags at the draft, and we've spoken with people who have said there were multiple teams that just said he's not on our board. We won't take a guy like that. And then you read an article last week that says that there was real, you know, infighting with the Giants organization of whether they would take Baker, and some said no, not to take him and get him, and obviously ultimately won out. So my question to you is, I mean, normally if you draft a guy and something like this happens and it doesn't pan out, it looks bad. Doesn't it look even worse, though, for Gettleman because there were red flags before and because there were others within the organization that were hesitant to take this guy? You went ahead, you took him anyway, and now you're here.
Yeah, you know, on this one, Dave, I really see it differently because if it worked out, you know, Dave should get, you know, the credit just in terms of, hey, he's the head of the organization. But with that said, in fairness, he's not the only one making that decision. Like, I've never been in a draft room either as the decision maker in Miami, at the Jets, where I just said, you know, indiscriminately, F you to everybody. And, you know, I got 20 people that want me to do one thing and I do the other. That's not to say that it was close or whatever, and I would go the other direction. I know Dave well enough to say this. Like, I would be floored if he just dismissed everybody else's opinion and went the opposite way. That's just not who he is. He's a leader. He's strong-minded. But I can't imagine that there were other people. I'm sure there were disagreements, but I can't imagine he was the only one that wanted Baker. And to the extent that you have to take risks, look, my track record is pretty public and pretty, you know, I would say, you know, picked over both positively and negatively. I've taken enormous risks that worked out. I've also traded for Tim Tebow that didn't work out, that hurt me professionally. And I think what happens is when you're the New York Giants and you're sitting there and you got to close the gap on unbelievable offenses like in Philadelphia, like in Dallas, and your defense stinks, you're going to take calculated risk. And I think that's acceptable. Now, I would not necessarily say DeAndre Baker hasn't worked out. I would give it a grade of incomplete. I would be monitoring this situation very, very carefully. But that's just something that you have to, when you're trying to close the gap and you have, you know, Coach Parcells, Dave, talked about this all the time. Like, you have very limited sort of like arsenal to get better. Cap, draft picks. And if you have an A player sitting there in the bottom of the first round that you think could go cover Amari Cooper or could cover some of those weapons in Philadelphia, I can understand why he would do it.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, I know when it happened, we spoke to you right after the draft. The Green Bay Packers made the decision to move up and draft Jordan Love. We heard from Aaron Rodgers for the first time. What did you think about Aaron Rodgers' comments regarding them making that draft pick of Jordan Love?
I thought he was saying the right things. I still, the more I think about it, Rick, that one really stuns me because you just paid Aaron Rodgers. You have to keep him for at least two more years. And I think the big difference between when Favre was the Packer quarterback and Rodgers was picked and this situation is Green Bay did a couple of things. They gave up a fourth-round pick to go get Love. I just don't understand how he can get on the field for at least 2 years. And they didn't get the receiver, and they downgraded at right tackle. They were one game away from being in the Super Bowl. You have a Hall of Fame quarterback. I just don't understand it. I understand why you need another quarterback. There were times in my career I didn't do a good enough job with the depth at quarterback, but to proactively trade up for a guy and not address the other needs, I don't understand that.
Mike T, with NFL teams beginning to open up their facilities this week, I guess the question becomes, what will they do in terms of organized team activities or mini camps as this happens? Or is it more realistic to think that teams are just going to prepare to get ready for training camp?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter, Chris. Just in talking to people around the league, I think realistically what we're going to see at the end of the day is teams really get ready for training camp. You know, Sean Payton came out pretty clearly and said, hey, you know, I'm not doing anything before training camp. Now, look, you can do that when you and Drew Brees have been together for a decade. And, you know, Joe Judge and all these other new coaches, they need every rep, every meeting, everything they can get their hands on. So, but I do think, and I thought Mike Tomlin was a real thought leader, you know, when he talked about, you know, one of the great things about our sport, guys, is all 32 teams, in theory, are the same cap, draft picks. And to have one team be able to go into a facility and not another, that kind of gets away from the fundamental notion of what, like, we love about our league. So my sense of it is, at the end of the day, we'll see training camp. But I would be surprised if we saw a lot going on before then.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Where are we? We see the video now, Roethlisberger. He shaved the beard. He says he's in good health. What is your expectation for him? I mean, he's an older quarterback coming off a major injury to his throwing arm. You think he gets back to where he was or close to it?
Well, Dave, good gosh. The first thing is my expectations are we all need new things in our life. If we're talking about someone shaving a beard, you know it's a slow news cycle. I mean,
well, listen, like, facial hair has exploded during this quarantine time.
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, there's some places you couldn't work, including for, you know, Coach Parcells back in the day. You know, it was, and I would say there were some other, environments I was in where facial hair was strongly, strongly discouraged, but I digress. However, I would be a little concerned if I was Pittsburgh for two reasons. A, and this was my concern about Tua coming out of the draft. You have a guy that's 38, been hurt. Those guys usually don't get healthier. And going back to Tua for a second, he was a guy that had been hurt multiple times, and that's not to say he can't have a great career, but oftentimes your prior track record is a good indicator of what could happen in the future. And what I would say about Pittsburgh in particular is we traded away Josh Dobbs, who I really like. I think he has a chance to be a good backup, maybe a low-level starter. Mason Rudolph isn't good enough. Delvin Hodges isn't good enough. So now you're sitting there, 38, injury-prone, bad elbow, and you don't have anybody behind him. That's why, to me, the guy that makes a ton of sense there, and I said this before, is Cam Newton. Why would you not take a flyer on a guy that has taken a team to the Super Bowl, been the first pick in the draft, and if he's healthy, he's, what, 7 years younger than Roethlisberger? You may have your next quarterback right there without giving up a draft choice.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike, in your opinion, so we had the pass interference rule, the review rule, which was a complete, debacle. So that let that run its course. I'm of the opinion that if you somehow could find a way to incorporate the sky judge or the referee up in the booth, that could be most effective. Why is there such resistance to adopting something like that?
I think what Sean Payton said was, you know, kind of enlightening, which is I think the idea is there. Now it's the execution of the idea. And to me, what I would do is I would – and this is where, like, we're going to miss things like the XFL or maybe in preseason where, again, you defer to the league office to say, hey, whatever the standards are, let's just be consistent about it. And I think where people were disappointed, myself included, was I think last year there were some obvious PIs that when challenged, the league didn't, for whatever reason, didn't want to interfere with the referees on the field. But it was clear to me that they should have, you know, thrown the flag from Park Avenue, and whatever reason they're reticent to do that. But I think, Rick, what you're saying is fair, it's logical, and I think within 2 to 3 years, I think that's going to be revisited.
Mike T, we were talking about the DeAndre Baker situation earlier and all the implications that that would have for the player, but I wanted to know about the general manager, Dave Gettleman. In an offseason when the owner said he had to improve his batting average, I mean, this headline with Baker couldn't have done him any favors. How real or how hot is the seat for Gettleman coming into 2020?
Well, what's interesting to me, Chris, and again, we touched on this a little bit before, which is I think the whole notion of the benefit of the doubt is so different right now between Judge and Gettleman, just from a standpoint of, you know, look, let's face it, the better DeAndre Baker plays, the better that's going to help Dave Gettleman's security. So they are on, obviously, two different timelines. This certainly doesn't help. You know, the truth usually is the tiebreaker in these situations, but I've also seen new head coaches look for an opportunity to clear out the old. I mean, look at what, you know, Matt Rhule did. I mean, he just, from Greg Olson, you know, Kuechly, Cam Newton, Eric Reed, he got rid of all the leadership there and started fresh. And typically that's what new head coaches like to do. So I think whatever indiscretions DeAndre Baker and let it play out, I think, if Joe Judge is going to look at those indiscretions much more significantly, I think, than Dave Gettleman will.
All right, Mike, listen, stay safe, stay healthy. We will talk to you next week. Have a good holiday weekend. We'll talk to you a week from today.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be talking about things besides shaving, and I hope to see you guys in person, you know, sometime in the not-too-distant future as well.
That would be wonderful. That really
have
would
a
be
gorgeous, Mike T, I have a gorgeous mustache.
Oh, yeah.
That you're going to love it.
You see, facial hair is a big topic of conversation.
Well, man, I got to get up with the times, so maybe that's all.
Good stuff, Mike.
All right, well.
We'll talk to you. All right, thank you. Terrific. Terrific. I'm a big fan of Mike Tannenbaum. Now, by the way,
you know what's amazing? You know what's amazing, though? Mm-hmm. Just quickly, like reading a lot of the stuff with DeAndre Baker and this whole situation. I mean, you have his, and this is what he's supposed to. I mean, it's his lawyer. How could you get it this wrong? Like, how could, I mean, he's charged with, you know, eight different, how could you get it that wrong if he's innocent?
Right.
That's the part of, that doesn't make any sense.
Unless they can get the eyewitnesses to flip. Which I mean, you might be able to.
Well, maybe that's possible, but you're still going to have to deal with the NFL and the personal conduct policy. And at the very least, the fact that he was arrested, the fact that the Giants have told him to stay away from the virtual offseason, that suggests some wrongdoing on the player's part. So, I mean, even though he might not be guilty of a crime, I mean, it's still poor judgment, and it still reflects badly on Dave Gettleman and the Giants as an organization.
By the way, he just pled not guilty to all eight charges. So, I don't know.
Kind of feels like the truth is somewhere in the middle of this, doesn't it?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good for him.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't look good for him, and it doesn't look good for Dave Gettleman. That's why I asked Mike T the question. I mean, you're talking about Dave Gettleman being on the hottest of hot seats as far as general managers go going into 2020. I mean, this is not something that helps his cause.
No.
Let me ask you a question, though. Let me ask you a question, right? We all expect that the Giants, especially under these circumstances, right, new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. I mean, Eagles look like they got better. Once Dak Prescott is signed, they got better, right? So as far as wins and losses are concerned, this is not a team that's going to have this huge jump in wins, correct?
Well, I feel like the Giants are going to be a lot better. Now, I don't know how that would be reflected in the record, but I do expect them to be better than a five-win team.
Okay, which is fine. But let's just say, for example, because we keep saying that Dave Gettleman's seat is hot and the batting average and everything else.
Yeah. Right?
And that is probably true. But say the Giants win five games. Mm. Defense is trash because it's just not that good. But, and Dave, this is your hot take, so I'll give you credit. Saquon Barkley wins the rushing title.
Rushing title, yeah.
And Daniel Jones throws, you know, 28 touchdowns and 12 picks. They're going to fire Dave Gettleman?
I think they could.
But I think if those things happen, then the Giants have, their record is going to be better than 5-11. You see what I'm saying?
Rick, it would be wins of what? Of 3, 4, 5, and 5 in 4 consecutive seasons?
Yeah, that's the part of it that you can't rationalize. Like, at some point, you have to look at their general manager and say, you're not doing the job. Bill Parcells used to always say, you are what your record says you are. And if he would have gone, 3 consecutive seasons, 5 wins, 4 wins, 5 wins, that's just not good enough.
No.
I mean, you already have the worst record in the National Football League over the last 3 years. You're 12-36. They got to start doing some winning. I'm not saying they got to have a winning season, but they got to be damn close to being able to do that. I mean, it's got to be 7-9, 8-8. Like, I'm looking for the Giants to take a step forward like we saw the Jets last year. Maybe it doesn't look the exact same, but in terms of the overall improvement of the club and the improvement of the record, it needs to look like that. Otherwise, you're talking about having a new GM in 2021.
And be competitive, too. I mean, how many times did you watch the Giants last year? The game, it was non-competitive, right? That makes a big difference. I mean, if you win 7 games and you're competing in 12 of the 16 games and there's only 4 that are, you know, get out from under you, I can live with that. You go 7-9 and you're a competitive team, I can live with that. You go 5-11, that's a bad season.
You can say it's a bad season, but it's going to come down to what it looks like.
But it's hard for me to envision, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. It's hard for me to envision 5-11 looking pretty good.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Dave.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, you're probably more right than wrong. I'm just saying, I mean, I would have a hard time imagining that after all the criticism that Dave Gettleman took for drafting Daniel Jones at 6, the rookie season that he had, which was a great rookie season, he cleans up the fumbling issue. Throws for, you know, like I said, 28, 30 touchdowns, you know, 10, 12 picks, and Saquon Barkley is the best running back in the National Football League.
Right.
I mean, that's not bad.
Something.
That's not bad, but I think that there's a direct correlation to those guys performing at that level and the team winning games. Like, I understand your defense is awful, but if Saquon Barkley leads the league in rushing, that means your offense is controlling time of possession, which means your defense isn't on the field. So to me, I just think if Saquon has the season that we are all expecting him to because of the improvements at the offensive line and because the quarterback is improving going from year one to year two, I just think you're going to see an improvement in the wins column.
From your lips to God's ears, because I'm not even a Giants fan, but I just think as far as, you know, New York sports is concerned, I mean, it would be nice to have
both football teams be good.
Rico, you know what? I am a Giants fan. I want the organization to do well. I've been pessimistic the last 3 or 4 years, I guess ever since I started working at this station. But for the first time in a long time, I feel like the Giants are actually going to take a step forward in the right direction. I feel like this is the season that they're actually going to kind of come out of this, I guess, malaise that has been this past decade of football.
Oh, God, I hope so. Now, it's been brought to my attention that Michael and Don, maybe Michael more so than Don, not thrilled with our the way we address Mike Tenenbaum on our show.
All three of them are calling him Mr. T.
Drove me crazy.
Well, what's going on with that? Who calls him Mr. T?
I text
Tenenbaum's not that hard to say, and Mike is certainly not that hard to say.
Not hard at all.
Let's call Mark Teixeira Mr. T from now on.
I don't want to do that either. So I text
Ryan. Why do you think they do it?
I said, I'm getting a you-know-what chill hearing it time and time again. He thought it meant that I didn't like Tenenbaum. I was like, no, I don't like, I love
Tenenbaum. He's a terrific
as a guest. 30 seconds later, Rick DiPietro asked a question and referred to him as Mr. T like 4 times. I'm like, all right, Ryan must have said something because now he's just trying to get under my skin. But I don't think so. I think that's just what they do.
I think it's an awful sound.
Taking shots. Now, first of all, I never call him Mr. T. Ever, ever, ever. You guys do. I don't know why it bothers them to that extent.
I thought he liked it.
Well, he might like it, but they don't.
I had no idea they didn't like it until I was told, and that's why I said it numerous times.
So Don is right. You got a text saying, do me a favor, don't call him Mr. T, and you said, yeah, sure, and you said it 5 straight times? See, that's why I love you. That's what happened, isn't it?
Listen, if I knew it bothered them, I had no idea that it bothered them until I did.
No clue.
They sound so upset by it.
I thought Mike T originally liked it.
I can't even believe it's an issue.
I mean, I guess that's what happens in professional sports, though. You're in the locker room, you give people nicknames. I mean, even when it comes to the coaching staff and the front office people, you go by nicknames. Mike T, Mr. T. I don't see how that's a bad thing.
I just assume he liked necklaces. Like, he wore a lot of necklaces.
I don't take it as us being disrespectful to Mike Tannenbaum at all.
He didn't say anything.
No.
Santiago, has he once, when you pick up the phone to say thank you so much for joining us, said, like, listen, the Mike T's got to stop.
He's the nicest guy possible, so yeah. Even if it did bother him, he wouldn't say so.
Well, it bothers Michael and Don.
Should be calling him, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, we should be calling him Latte Larry with how, I mean, he just destroys.
Yeah, he could go on Man Lattes. Food. Man versus never beverage.
I've never seen anyone do an interview with a scalding hot latte and actually finish it, like, in the
you
midst of answering
the
question.
Drank it in, like, 40 seconds.
As he was answering the question.
Yeah. It's a marvel. It's one of the great wonders of the world.
He can't. As soon as it touches his lips, he's got to finish it. He can't help himself.
Loves it.
Which made me feel good, though. I mean, if you're going to get someone a drink, I mean,
right. I mean, he clearly appreciated it. He was not drinking it just to be nice.
Oh, no, no, no.
He was drinking it because he adored it.
Oh, attacked it.
Yeah.
I think it's the great chance he's ever had.
Rick, I know you love the cacao. Here we go. The Belmont Stakes will take place during June. Will be shortened from its traditional length of a mile and a half, I guess down to a mile and a quarter. But still, it will be the first of the three Triple Crown races that will run. It will be at Belmont Stakes in New York. The Kentucky Derby will be Saturday, September the 5th. And the Preakness will be October the 3rd. So the first leg of the Triple Crown, Belmont Stakes in June, Belmont Park.
That's good news.
That's good news.
It's good news. I mean, let's just keep stacking up days here. Stacking up days of good news. I like it.
Well, yesterday was a good news day. Today mm-hmm. is a good news day. I mean, that's it. Just you know, day after day, good news,
well,
good
yesterday,
news, good news.
Yesterday was a double whammy, though. Yesterday we had some good sports news. We also had some good vaccine news. Mm-hmm. So yesterday was a big Monday.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day.
Let's just keep up the momentum now.
That's right.
I had some good news this morning. I mean, I don't know if Cassie wanted a role play or whatever it is. It was like almost like she was New York State and I was professional sports.
Ah.
At around 5 a.m. ish. It was great.
Really?
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Open for business.
Really? Oh, really? Oh, very nice.
Open. It was great.
Somehow I'm going to get in trouble for this.
Why would you get in trouble for that? That was strictly insinuation.
Chris,
Dave's going to get in trouble for this because Dave allowed you to go down this road.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to quit then. Then I quit. I'm done.
You're not going to quit. You're going to
mark it down. I'm going to get a text that says,
if I can't be me, then I don't want to do this. If I can't be me and I can't share stories about my life, then I don't want to do this. Mark it down. What is it, 11:59 on Tuesday? I'm done.
Rico, the suits are saying it because they have to say it.
I'm finished. I'm over.
They don't really want you to stop.
No,
he's
got
it, Dave. You've got to get him to stop that. Got to stop.
I'll be done.
Because all right, well, be done for now. Because at 11:59, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and get into the last dance. And before you leave, can you give us one more cuddle, marry, trash, please?
Yeah, I told you, I'm done. It's it. When you pick up after break, I'm done.
You won't be here for the noon hour.
I'm off. I'm shutting my machine down.
All right. Well, you got to stay tuned for this because I get you back. Chris, I'm sure you're all excited for Cuddle, Marry, Trash at 12:15 today.
Is that the name we're going with for the segment?
That's until I'm told otherwise, it's Cuddle, Marry, Trash.
All right. Yeah, I'm fired up about it. I think it's been cool. So welcome addition to our show.
Yeah, continue to make our way around the NFL.
Yeah.
Right?
No doubt about it, Dave.
Rapid fire. Like the occasional soundbite.
Dave, I'm never going to be opposed to talking about football, ever. Just gives me another opportunity to do it.
It is a good sport. It's a weird thing. You know, the weird thing about where we are right now is that you miss baseball because it's taken away from us. Basketball, taken away from us. Hockey, taken away from us. The one thing that you might miss it, but it's just normal missing, is football because we wouldn't have had football right now. We haven't actually lost a game because of this virus yet.
No, we haven't lost a game, and we've actually had more of an opportunity to dive into the offseason moves that all of these teams are making, Dave. And listen, this is the talent procurement period, right? You got free agency, you got the draft, and teams trying to upgrade the talent level on their respective clubs. And it's awesome that we actually have a chance to kind of to do a deep dive into it, and then the anticipation that, you know, once sports resumes, we're not going to be that far from when NFL training camps will open up. We hope.
What do they open up in July?
Yeah, end of July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're 2 months from the norm being training camp starting end of July.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Exactly.
It's right there. Hi, Rick.
Is he not going to come back?
He's not going to talk?
He's not going to do it?
Oh, this is wonderful.
You know, this is a once-a-week phenomenon, right, Dave? Like, he does this once a week. He just takes a segment. He's going to go dark.
He can't take dark the whole segment, though, because he's got to do Cuddle, Marry, Trash at 12:15.
Yeah, he's got to be the one to do it.
Unless we hand it over to Santiago. Santiago,
but nobody can do a deep dive on the NFC South like Rick DiPietro.
No, that's true. And, you know, and that's what's going to be that's going to be his weak point here. He's going to hear us talking NFC South, and he's not going to be able to remain quiet.
Yeah, he can't.
Like, we can do it right now. Like, if we talked about Tom Brady and Drew Brees and the Saints, the Buccaneers.
I will say this, Dave. I thought it was interesting that the updated odds to win the Pro Football Championship from Vegas had the Buccaneers at 12-1, and they had the Saints at 13-1.
Really? That is interesting.
That was very interesting.
But the Saints are still the favorite to win the division, aren't they?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm talking about this was as of, I think, 2 days ago.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not sure if the Saints are still favored. I'm just saying, in terms of winning the Super Bowl, the Buccaneers, with the latest odds, had better odds than the New Orleans Saints.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
The favorites have to be either the Ravens and the Chiefs, right? In
Ravens and the Chiefs. I mean, reverse the order. Chiefs, Ravens, and then it's 49ers, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Were the Bucs 4?
They were one of the top teams.
Wow.
And I think there was one team that was like 10-1, and then it was a bunch of teams that were 12-1, and the Bucs were one of the 12-1 teams.
And you're all over the Bucs this year, right?
Yeah, I like the Bucs. I think the Bucs are actually going to win that division, man. I love what the Saints have been able to do in terms of putting talent around Drew Brees at the latter stages of his career, but I just don't know how much Drew Brees has left. And you're talking about a team that has 11 wins or better 3 consecutive years. At some point, they're going to fall off, Dave. And I just think that this is that season where you start to see the regression from the quarterback, but also from that team.
You know what would lead me to think that maybe they possibly might, and I know this is a weird avenue to go, but now, obviously, it is something that's necessary. No fans. I mean, the Superdome is such a huge advantage. And they're so dominant. Like, I mean, they don't lose more than what, a game or maybe two at the most at home. If that becomes just a game in a large dome with no fans and no screaming and no intimidation, you know, and that home field goes away, maybe they're not the same football team. You know this, Chris. There will be teams that will be affected by not having their home crowd behind them.
Yeah, they will be. And that's Seattle. Exactly. Seattle, the 12th man. That's a huge advantage. I mean, the seats in that stadium it's almost built like an amphitheater. So it's like, it's just the sound, and it feels like the fans are right on top of you. Like that's losing a huge advantage. So that's certainly going to play a role in what happens in the outcome of these games in the 2020 season.
Kansas City, Seattle. Philadelphia, you don't have the lunatics in Philadelphia throwing beer bottles as you get off the bus.
Yeah, I'm sure that the actual players on the Eagles teams will probably be just as excited that the home fans aren't there as the visiting team, just how those fans in Philly can be. But listen, Dave, I mean, yeah, this is going to be an adjustment for everybody because you're probably not going to have fans at a lot of these games this fall, but I think the win is just being able to have live team sports, and of the team sports in this country, football is king. So if we're able to kick off the NFL regular season on time, if that game, what is it, September 10th?
Yep.
Where we've got Texans Chiefs?
Yep.
I mean, listen, if we're able to get the season underway on that date, fans are people are going to be fired up about it.
Oh, my God.
It's not going to matter.
You're fired up to start the NFL season regardless, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we sit there in the studio and we're just like, you're frothing at the mouth of oh God, we got football tonight. Could you imagine if we're going to get football? And who knows if the other sports are even back at that point? If our entree back to sports was football, we'd go crazy.
Yeah, I'd be through the moon, Dave. But here's the other thing. And what you just said is interesting. I have a hard time believing that we're going to have the NFL preseason and the NFL regular season start on time if we don't have a return from those other sports. Like, if we don't see football, I mean, if we don't see basketball, baseball, hockey return by the time late July, early August gets here, then I don't know that we're going to see pro football get started on time.
You're right. And I think I saw, was it, I think it was Adam Silver, somebody close to Adam Silver said that, you're not going to know, you might not know anything about the NBA until June 15th.
Yeah.
Yesterday. Between June, like, forget about the rest of May. You won't have any knowledge by the next 2 weeks. June 1st to June 15th is when you're going to find out what the NBA is going to possibly do. So, I mean, Chris, argument's sake, June 15th is when they come out with what they're going to do. Now you've got to have a training camp. Then you've got to get the games back on. I mean, realistically, I don't know how at that point you can see games until August.
Which brings in the question what the NBA is going to do with the regular season. Because, I mean, the later you put this off, the more it's going to push the NBA to resume the season with the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? I don't think we're going to see a conclusion
to that. Hockey, basketball, you don't see regular seasons when we return.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you can reduce the number of players that are at risk by just getting rid of the teams that aren't going to qualify for the postseason. Like, why put those players at risk if you really don't have to?
No reason to. You want to expand the postseason. You want to have 24 teams in hockey, which they've thrown out there, or, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 in the Eastern and Western Conference battle out to see who gets in the bottom two, you know, spots there. Fine. But
we don't need to see the Golden State Warriors, Dave. Even Steve Kerr is talking about how they think this season is over and they're getting ready for the next season. We don't need to see we don't need to see the Cavs. We don't need to see the Knicks. Like, we're all set. There's no point. There's no point in putting those players at risk. So
bad to say.
Yeah,
but that's true. All right, Mega Millions giving you 274 million reasons to take a chance. That's a whole lot of millions in Jersey. One mega chance could be all it takes. So take a chance on Mega Millions because anything can happen in Jersey. All right, Santi, you might be up here with Cuddle, Marry, Trash. You might not be. I don't know. But are you ready to play it just in case?
Absolutely not. I think Rick is though.
Okay. Well, let's see if Rick is, in fact, is back and feels better.
All right, fellas, I'm back. I'm contractually obligated to be here, so I am back. Dealing with a little school issue, but we passed it. We figured it out. So let's get going. Let's go with the Cuddle, Marry, Trash AFC North edition. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we go. The Baltimore Ravens are clearly, hands down, you don't even doubt it, the best team in the AFC North.
Oh, that's nuptials all the way. That's like, yeah.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, you know, 4-carat diamond. That's, you
ooh,
know, black
ball.
Tie.
I see you, Rothenberg.
Oh, yeah. That is a, you will not ask, at least in my mind, a more obvious question today during Cuddle, Marry, Trash. That is marry. That's like 68 years of wedded bliss. That's how confident I feel in that one. 100%. They are, without a doubt, the most talented, best team, will win the division. In fact, outside of maybe Kansas City, and I'm not even saying that it's definitive, I think that Baltimore is a hands-down lock to win that division.
Dave, I'm right there with you. I'm going to show you how much confidence I have in the Ravens, that they are the most talented team and they will win the AFC North. I'm gonna show you how much confidence I have. You guys know I love money. I probably love money more than anybody at this station except for Michael K. I would marry that take that Ricky just had with no prenup. That's how much I love that take. Like the Baltimore Ravens were arguably the most talented team in football. And they've done nothing but improve their talent level this offseason. That's going to be a really, really good team.
I can't get past the prenup comment. That's big stuff.
That's what I'm saying,
Dave. Confidence.
Yeah. I'm willing to
that
risk it all.
If it was socially acceptable,
I'm willing
I would marry
to risk
them.
It all on the Baltimore Ravens winning the AFC North.
Yep.
That's a whole different level. All right, I wanted to start you guys off easy. I knew you kind of felt that way. So we'll go with the second question. So Big Ben, he showed some of the video of him throwing a juju and some of his wide receivers. Got the hair trimmed, beard trimmed. Big Ben will lead the Pittsburgh Steelers back into the playoffs this season.
Ooh. All right, you want me to go first, Chris, or are you ready?
I'm going to give you the honors, Dave.
A little nugget.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the honors. You know I don't like the Steelers, so.
All right, let me give you a tasty little nugget, just so you guys know. So as far as total QBR, right, the Pittsburgh Steelers last season were 31st in the NFL in QBR and still managed an 8-8 record.
Right.
Little nugget.
And that's why I'm going to call that in to cuddle.
Does someone need a hug?
I can't marry it because that would just be way too aggressive. But their defense is very good, and they're very well coached. And their quarterback play was bad last year. It was really bad. So even if he's not what he was, he's an upgrade over what they have. Seven teams go to the postseason from the AFC. I feel pretty confident saying I would cuddle that right in and very closely cuddle the Steelers to the postseason.
Yeah, you're right, Dave. I'm going to cuddle it for a lot of the same reasons that you did. If you had expanded playoffs last year, the Steelers would have been in. So I'm saying with seven teams coming out of the conference, I believe they will be one of those seven because of that defense. And because no matter what Shea Roethlisberger is in, he's got to be better than Duck Hodges or Mason Rudolph. So I'm right there with you. I can't marry it because I would say that if you would win the division, then you're guaranteed a playoff spot. I don't think they'll win the AFC North. That belongs to the Ravens. So I'm going to cuddle right up to the Steelers being a playoff team, a wild card team.
A nuzzling cuddle, though. A very firm cuddle.
Yeah, that's a cuddle with a snuggie and fire going, that kind of cuddle.
Right, yes.
Pillow talk, yeah, whole thing. Here we go. This is going to be tough for you guys. I'm just letting you know right now because this could be, you know, maybe you just want to cuddle, but, you know, partly feels like maybe this could be the one. Got a good job.
It could be the
nice
one.
Nice looking. Family likes her a lot. Here you go. The Cleveland Browns have the best offensive weapons in the NFL.
In the NFL?
Yeah, I went bold.
Wow. So you got Beckham.
You got Beckham.
You got Landry.
You got Kareem Hunt. You got Nick Chubb.
You got
Hooper. You got Hooper.
You sound like a Yiddish man. You got Hooper.
You got the Hooper.
Hooper.
Muzzle, muzzle. And then you also have Njoku.
Mm-hmm. The best. I mean, it's not far off. Chris, you want to take this one or you want me to go again?
Rick, I'm going to trash that one. I'm going to trash
Burn
that
this
one.
Garbage. Look at this garbage.
When it comes to the skill position players, man, I really like what Andy Reid has out there in Kansas City. And they only got better drafting Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the last pick in the first round. To put him alongside the fastest wide receiver in the NFL, fastest player in the NFL in Tyreek Hill, and then a tight end that has had four consecutive 1,000-yard receiving seasons. You know, Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman. I would prefer what Kansas City has over what the Browns have.
So you're trashing.
Yeah, I'm trashing it.
Yeah, I'm going to trash it as well.
Firmly. Look at this garbage! Look at this garbage!
I'll tell you, when you look at what the Jets can do with two tight ends at one time and and a 37-year-old running back, and then someone that, you know, they haven't overused in Lev
guy.
Bell, Jamison
Awful
Crowder.
Guy.
I mean, added the kid from Baylor. I mean, the Jets have made real
Denzel
strides
Mims.
Here.
Yeah, you're a bad guy.
Right? Don't you? No. I would agree with Chris. I think it's the Chiefs have so much talent. And look, I think Tampa's quite a talented offense as well. I guess the question for me is, yes.
Tampa doesn't have the running back, though. Stop.
Granted,
Tampa,
you're right.
Nick Chubb had the rushing title until the last game of the season when Derrick Henry
took it. You're right. Listen, it's not a ridiculous question. I just would go in other directions. And look, I don't know. You know, we say Odell Beckham, and the name certainly moves the needle. But Odell Beckham, and you've heard it before, for the last 3-4 years, he has not been sensational.
Nope.
So does he come back and become an elite wide receiver again? So I don't think it's a crazy question, but I'll still pick up the lid, throw it away, slam it down, and trash it.
Santa, do you think the Cowboys are in that conversation?
Put me on the spot like that?
I have to. 2,000-yard receivers, added another wide receiver in the first round, Zeke Elliott.
I'm going to say no just because it's a new head coach. I mean, it's supposed to be the same scheme. There's going to be new wrinkles to that offense. I don't think they're going to be top, but they'll be in the conversation.
Okay. You don't have, you know who doesn't have wrinkles? Nick Chubb. Okay? Nick Chubb does not have wrinkles. Here we go.
oh my.
just can't help myself. Joe Burrow will set the rookie touchdown record.
It's 27 by Baker Mayfield?
Yes.
He's got
lots
a shot.
Of weapons.
He's got a shot.
Lots of weapons.
He's got weapons, and he's going to be a day one starter. So, yeah, he's got a chance.
So what are you going to do? You
they're going to be throwing the ball a lot because they're going to be behind. So, yeah.
Cuddle it.
Yeah, I'm going to cuddle right up to that one.
See, I'll just cuddle it.
Does someone need a hug?
I'm going to cuddle it, and then I'm going to realize, no, I need more. Cuddling is not enough here.
Ooh.
Joe Burrow will throw the most touchdowns by a rookie in the history.
Yes.
Of the NFL.
Wow, Dave Rothenberg.
I'm going to get down on one knee. I'll propose to it, and I will marry it. He will throw for 30-plus touchdowns in his rookie year.
Does it bother you that Bobby Hart is one of his starting tackles?
Doesn't make you feel great. That being said, I mean, it's not an offense without weapons. They have a good running back. They have a good receiver, and I understand that he hasn't always been healthy. They drafted a kid that you have expectations for, and I like Joe Burrow, and I think they're going to be in a lot of games where they have to score points, maybe even meaningless points. So I'm going to say 30-plus for Joe Burrow.
Wow. That's bold.
That's strong, Dave.
Right, final one for today's Cuddle Mary Trash for the AFC North. Lamar Jackson, reigning MVP, will win his first playoff game this season.
He better. He doesn't.
Yeah, Rico, I'm gonna cuddle right up to that one. I'm gonna cuddle it.
You're just gonna cuddle that?
I'm just.
Oh,
gonna,
come on!
I'm gonna meet
that for the first time, and I'm gonna propose.
If it was
socially
acceptable, I would marry them.
Listen, Dave. Until he actually does it, I can't have confidence that he will do it.
If he doesn't do it this year, you're gonna have huge conversations surrounding him not being able to do it ever.
Yeah, but he was a quarterback that won MVP in his first full season as a starter. So I'm not you're going to have huge questions about it, but it's not going to be a question as to whether or not he's going to be the quarterback in Baltimore for the foreseeable future.
He'll be the quarterback forever as long as he's healthy. But
yeah,
he lost at home to the Chargers, lost at home to the Titans when they were double-digit favorites. You have to figure it'd be much of the same this year. I'm marrying that. They're winning a playoff game.
Okay, all right.
Marrying that.
Okay.
I can't believe Canty's not married. He went as far as he's going to marry the Ravens being the best team in the division without a prenup. To, yeah, I'll cuddle them in the playoffs.
Playoffs is different, man. Playoffs is different, and until I actually see you do it, I can't have confidence that you can do it.
So you have reservations about Lamar Jackson?
Dave, I just understand that the playoffs is a different animal. The speed of the game is completely different. Schemes that you're going to see are different. The overall physicality, the intensity is different. And you got to be able to get past that. And until he does it, I'm not going to come into the year and say, yeah, you can book the Baltimore Ravens winning a playoff game. I'm not going to do that.
Wow. Could you imagine if they went 14-2 again and didn't win a playoff game? Ugh.
Well, they could have the unfortunate luck of meeting up with the Greg Williams defense in the playoffs.
They could.
Jets make that run. God, that would be great. Think and dream. There you have it, boys. That is today's AFC North Cuddle Marry Trash.
There you go. Wonderfully, wonderfully done.
You need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, here we go, fellas. Tuesday edition of Knobservations. We'll start with some good news. And I was told by my son Milo that he wanted to be involved with today's segment. So we'll start with some good news from him. The good news is, I was just recently told, Milo did excellent in the online school today, got all his work done. Bad news is we apparently have to add another movie to the list of probably can't watch anymore.
Uh-oh.
Which is Jumanji 2, one of his favorites. And I'll tell you why. Because what they've been doing now in an effort to kind of just teach the kids, obviously, how to read, you sound out words, you know, A, B, C. Today they were on U. And they had to pick a word that started with the letter U and then draw a picture. Would you care to guess what Milo asked my wife to draw that he thought began with the letter? He said, U, U, U. I know what I want to draw. I want to draw a eunuch.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, God.
Because, of course,
so how does Cass answer
too,
that one?
I'm not 100% sure how she didn't have time to get the full explanation of how. Needless to say, they didn't draw a eunuch, but that was in Jumanji 2, which we watched recently.
Hmm.
Because one of the brothers apparently in the movie had to be a eunuch.
Now, I think she should have, her immediate reaction should have said, eunuch is with an E.
She should have said, so you, I don't you know. Need to... Here's the thing though. I don't know if she could spell eunuch. Yeah. That's the problem.
I think it starts with an E, doesn't it?
I got a text message from her the other day and it said guitar. And I was like, what does guitar mean? She says, Milo had to write guitar and I didn't know how to spell it right. So I had to type it into the phone.
Wow. Wow.
You're leaving. Your wife had to drive.
She's listening. She knows.
She's listening.
She knows. She's listening. Here we go, Dave. This next story. Now I'll give you a quick, did it happen in Florida?
And okay, then
I'll
give yes. You, yes, we like those.
Here we go. Did this happen in Florida? The freight train driver on Wednesday was startled, and in his career as a driver of said train over 40 years, had never seen anything like this entire life. Actually caused quite a disturbance. He discovered two people looking for a thrill, actually, believe it or not, making love on the train tracks.
Really?
On the train tracks, yeah. No care for trains, just decided they wanted to get a thrill, and they were going to just right on the train tracks.
Huh.
Was that Florida?
How about that?
No. So, I can't imagine.
So we need the threat of dying?
Yes.
They really want to spice it up?
The passion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Spice it up.
And this guy actually says if there was a train coming at any point, that would have been it. This would not have been thrill-seeking. This would have been the end.
What's wrong with people?
I'm going to say that's not Florida.
Bored, maybe, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but you can still do that without doing it on the tracks.
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
It's the same activity.
Never once did I think to myself, let's spice this up by going to the...
Let's spice this up, yeah.
Let's go to the tracks.
It's a train track right now. Let's just go lay right on the tracks.
Where do you want to go do this, Jamaica?
So, Dave, you said not Florida, Dave?
I'm going to say no. In fact, I'm going to say... Thank you for appreciating the line. Woodside. I'm going to say not this country.
Oh, God.
Rico, I'm gonna ride Dave's coattails. I'm going to say not Florida as well.
It is a smaller coat now. Ray Santiago, you're a thrill seeker.
I just feel like Florida, they'd probably try things that didn't involve train tracks, other thrill seeking. Just going to leave
that's
it at
probably,
that.
That's probably a good guess. You guys are all correct. That is not, in fact, Florida. And, Dave, you are correct. That is not in this country, my friend.
Really?
Good on you. Yeah.
Nice.
And if I had shown you the headline, too, you would have known because it says, a Randy couple put their lives at risk.
So what was it, England?
Yeah. What are people doing, man? Like, I don't even want to get into it. Here's this next story, Dave, and Ray's got the actual sound. I'm incorporating sound into observations. I thought the story was fitting because Dave, I mean, you almost made it to professional tennis until you assaulted someone with your racket.
No, I did not almost make it to professional tennis.
Well, I like to pretend because, I mean.
Okay, you can pretend, but to be honest, I didn't almost make it anywhere. I was a good player. And that's it.
Yeah, until you assaulted somebody. And then you also grew up in Nassau County, so I'm giving you actually, you're going to love this. This is some tennis guidelines given to you by Laura Curran, Nassau County executive. Ready for this?
Every player, unless they're from the same household, has to bring their own tennis balls so that you don't touch other people's tennis balls with your hands. You can kick their balls, but you can't touch them. I'm going to blush, sorry. Of course, if you're playing with someone in your household, you can touch those tennis balls. To avoid confusion between whose balls are whose, you can use a marker, like a Sharpie, to mark out to put an X or put someone's initials on them.
The best part of the media is hysterical.
You can kick their balls, but you can't touch them.
I don't know what household she grew up in, but that's frowned upon to touch other people.
Oh, my God.
Tennis balls. You just don't do it.
Did she not think of what she was going to say before she had the press conference?
I mean, no, I think she probably thought of it, or someone wrote it down for her. I mean, she's giving you the tennis guidelines.
You can kick their balls, but you can't touch them.
But the fact that she's blushing and laughing in between reading her statement, that's classic.
I
love it.
That's classic.
I figured you would like that. I have an update, too. You're going to love this. Now I'm sound, and I'm incorporating an update from yesterday's story.
Oh, nice. It's not a five-year-old child who's getting rewarded all over the place, right?
No, I say that for you. That's your update. You've taken control of that. This is FC Seoul, who had the sex dolls in the seats.
Yeah.
Remember that story from yesterday?
Sure.
They're claiming they apologized. FC Seoul is insisting that they thought they were they were premium mannequins. They weren't sex dolls. They were premium mannequins. I forgot to add this part of the story yesterday. Here's what makes it great. So you're apologizing. Okay, I get it. You thought they were premium mannequins. Here's where you lose me. Apparently, some of the dolls were holding signs that advertised X-rated websites.
And then it blotched them out?
No, people noticed. Yes.
Oh, my God.
So there were 30 mannequins, 28 female, 2 male. So the company actually called them. This company that sells the mannequins called them to fill the empty seats. And it was the fans online that noticed that some of the mannequins looked more like the sex dolls.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing to me. Amazing.
I know her.
And here we go. Final story for today's observations. Another update. And you're going to love this because we haven't talked about it forever. Tiger King update. Ready for a Tiger King update?
What we got?
Okay. So the big thing now that came out of Tiger King, I mean, there's a lot of things that came out of it, but the whole Carol Baskin thing?
Yeah.
Did she or didn't she? Oh, yeah. Well, we got some new information. Apparently, they have a couple different signatures that were clearly forgeries on documents related to her ex-husband.
Don really?
Mills. Mm-hmm. And it's not a difficult call, said one of these handwriting experts. They look like they were actually forged off of, they can be traced back to marriage documents. So it looks like whoever did it, I don't want to cast any aspersions here, but that they were clearly forged signatures.
Wow. There's not a shred of doubt in my mind that lady's husband is Tiger Tsushima right now.
Well, I guess it takes one to know one.
Yeah, it takes one to know one, huh? Tiger Tsushima.
So what they're saying, and thanks, OJ, for that, the discovery of the forgeries could be powerful evidence in a potential criminal case. So how about that?
Wow.
More to come with this.
So he's in jail.
She could be in jail.
Yeah.
Her ex-husband could be Tiger Tsushima, whoever that is.
Right. The one woman doesn't have an arm anymore.
Yeah, she's got no arm, and then you got Nicolas Cage playing Joe Exotic.
He'll be terrific.
If you say so.
You don't think so?
I think he'll be fine.
I think he'll be excellent.
He'll be fine. Yeah, he'll be good.
Muscles freeze. You can't breathe. You spend all you so do hard is to break your own back and spit your guts out. But that's after your skin melts off.
He's got to take the wig he wears now off and just put the blonde mullet wig on.
Yeah, he's going to be excellent.
Are you looking forward to that? I mean, that's going to be something you're going to be dialed into.
Yeah, sure.
Have you watched?
No.
What are you doing, man?
I watched one of the worst movies I've ever seen yesterday, and I'm not exaggerating. Ever. It was brutal. And then I went to the guide to see how many stars it got. One star. It was so bad.
What was it?
Hot Chick.
Hot Chick. Who's in Hot Chick? Is it new?
Is it the Wayans?
No.
That's White Chicks.
That's White Chicks. Okay. This was Rachel McAdams. I think Rob Schneider was in it. And there's another blonde girl that's somewhat famous.
This is an older movie, Hot Chick, isn't it?
It was, I'm telling you, it was so bad. Like, I couldn't believe how bad it was. It was so bad that I couldn't turn it off.
Well, Dave, if Rob Schneider's in the movie, I mean, the bar couldn't have been set but so high in terms of the quality of the film.
Oh, Anna Faris is the other girl.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen it, yeah.
Would you not agree it might have been the worst movie you've ever seen?
Probably not. I've seen worse. I've seen worse. I've definitely seen worse.
It was bad.
I've seen some bad movies, dude. I've seen some written, and I've sat through all of them. Brutal.
What was the worst movie you've ever seen?
Whew, that's a tough one. Pieces of April was awful. Awful.
Really?
Awful. Oh, it was awful. Awful.
So bad that I should watch it?
No. Don't do it. I would I would feel bad you watching that movie.
I'm gonna tell you another really bad one. The movie that Will Smith did with his son, that was pretty bad. That was brutal.
Which one's this?
I think it's like a sci-fi movie. I want to say it's called After Earth or something like that.
Because I thought you were going to say Pursuit of Happiness. I like that movie.
No. I'm talking about it's a sci-fi movie. I think it's called After Earth.
After Earth.
It's awful. Awful. Like so, bust.
Yeah. Hot Chick, I do not recommend it.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.